This is KCPX Central Coast Public Radio. It's time for Issues and Ideas, a show that features a wide variety of local voices, sharing their thoughts and perspectives. Coming up, KCPX's programming intern, Sam DJ, sits down with members of Cal Poly's Mariachi Club to talk about community and music.
I feel like being able to create a mariachi got us to find a lot of other Latinos and Hispanics that really want to connect with their roots.
Also, KCPX's Tom Wilmer speaks to award-winning author Yang Huang about her books and her life in China.
Yeah, I actually grew up at the tail end of the Cultural Revolution, so we saw the trauma the nation had gone through.
These stories and more coming up on Issues and Ideas. Good afternoon. It's Monday, February 17th, 2025. I'm Meher Ali. Let's start with Peace, Love, and Pets, a segment hosted by Robin Coleman of Woods Humane Society.
Welcome to KCBX. My guest today is Jamie Pierce, a lifelong Central Coast resident currently living in Arroyo Grande with her husband, two daughters, four cats, and two dogs. Jamie shares she has loved animals her entire life, but cats always had a way of finding her. She wanted to find a way to combine her love of cats with her entrepreneurial spirit. And after her first visit to a cat cafe in Hawaii, she says she knew this was what she was created to do. Jamie has recently opened the Caffeinated Cat Cafe in Grover Beach, where she features adoptable kittens and cats in a cafe atmosphere. Woods hosted a Coffee with the Cats event recently at our Atascadero shelter, and we can definitely attest this community loves coffee and cats. In just our two-hour event, we welcomed over 130 coffee and cat lovers, and 16 cats found homes just in that one day in Atascadero. So I'm so excited to hear more about your wonderful, and I think the first ever cat cafe in Slo County, is that right?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, welcome, Jamie, to Peace, Love, and Pet.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Tell me how you got this going. What were some of the obstacles you were facing? And how are things going now that you are open?
Thank you. Yes. So we opened in the middle of December, December 14th, and things have been going so well. The community is just in love with our cafe. The kitties are happy. We're happy. It's just been so wonderful. Wonderful. So I have fostered for many years now, fostered cats, and I loved it. There was nothing I loved more than seeing that cat go to their forever home. Mm-hmm. Just seeing the family happy, the kitties were happy. It was everything to me. So that passion just kind of was stirring in me, and I knew I wanted to use that in some way to do something bigger. And yeah, I walked into a cat cafe when I was on vacation one time in Hawaii, and it was as if light bulbs just popped on that this is what I could do, and this is what the Central Coast needs. And it took a long time. It took over 2 years of research and business preparation and consulting with different, you know, business and advisors and all kinds of different things. But it took a long time, lots of obstacles, lots of rewards too. And we finally made it happen, and we opened December 14th of last year.
Yay. That's amazing. Yeah. So how are things going, and are you staying busy? What's the process? If someone were to walk in today, what's the process look like?
Yes. So we definitely take walk-ins, mostly during the weekdays. If you come on a weekend, we highly, highly recommend you make a reservation, which you can do on our website. We usually sell out on the weekend. So we do have a smaller space, so we can only take about 8 or 9 people an hour. So that's why we have the reservations, just so you can be sure to get the spot that you want at the time you want. But you can, during the week, walk in. We're a little bit slower during weekdays. So just come in, you check in, and you can either do a 25-minute visit or a 50-minute visit. And if you want, you can purchase a really delicious cup of coffee. We have fresh, locally baked pastries you can purchase, some other fun snacks and treats. A lot of them are very cat-themed, too. And we also have a gift shop on site where you can, you know, browse and get some gifts for friends, gifts for yourself. But yeah, you purchase your admission, and then you get to go in and spend time with our adoptable cats. And we usually have 8 to 10 cats at a time. They live there on site. They are very relaxed and comfortable, and it's very much like a home-like environment, a little bit different than a shelter. So the kitties have the best time. You can play with them. You can sit there and relax with them. And the community is loving it. It's unlike anything that we really have here. So it's been a unique experience.
Very exciting to be in our county. And, of course, with so many animal lovers, it makes sense.
Yes.
So you are basically a wonderful, amazing foster for these cats that are at the cafe. Is that right? You are fostering them with some different rescue partners.
Yes.
So tell people how you get those cats, how the process works, and then you process the adoptions right there at the cafe?
For the most part, yes. So we are considered a foster home. We are not a shelter. We're not a rescue, but we do partner with those shelters and rescues. We have three different rescues that we're currently working with. And if you come in and meet a kitty that you love, you can start the adoption process through us. The final adoption does go through that rescue partner, but they will come to us to do the adoption on site. So a couple of our partners, they allow me to do the adoptions myself. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of fun. But others, they come and do it for us. So, but it's all done right there on site. So you don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah. So you can come in and just get what I call your fur fix.
Yes.
You know, sometimes not everybody can adopt, darn it.
Right.
But sometimes you just are missing your pet, maybe students missing their pets at home, college students, maybe someone who lives in a place that they aren't allowed to have pets, but really miss having pet.
Yes.
So you can just come in for a visit. No pressure to adopt.
Absolutely.
But we love when people fall in love. And I know because I follow you on social media and I just know how easy it is to fall in love. You have already been so successful at finding a bunch of already adoptions.
Yes.
How many adoptions have you done so far since December?
We are at 30 adoptions. That was our big milestone this week. And then we have a couple kitties pending too that are coming up later this week. So yeah, 30 cats in less than 2 months is very exciting. It surpassed my hopes.
Aww.
So I'm so happy.
The true warm and fuzzies. There is nothing better than helping an animal find their forever home. It's what I love being a part of at Woods so much. You've also been doing some really fun events. Again, at the shelter, we try to do some creative things. In my past, we've done some cat yoga. We've done some crocheting with cats. And tell us some of the things that have been a success and what you're going to continue. And it sounds like you're doing like weekly fun community events there.
We are. I love our local community and our local businesses. And I've really tried to partner up with local businesses to provide really fun events for our community. So we do a painting night at least once a month. I bring in a local artist and she runs the class. We're doing cat yoga twice a month. It's been extremely popular. We're booked already into March. With a local yoga studio, we do that. And then we do crochet with cats. We're working on a trivia night. We're doing all kinds of fun things. And we have at least one or two events happening every week. And they're very popular. So definitely get a reservation for those if you're interested.
And are those events for all ages, kids and adults?
Right now, most of our events are for probably 12 years and up. We are trying to come up with some new kids only events, though. We were thinking about it, crafting day. We do have a Saturday morning story time for kids. We do that twice a month also. So that's for our littlest ones. So, yeah, we're open to all ages. We love all ages. Everyone is welcome. So all kinds of things we're planning.
Love it. And tell me about the coffee part of the cafe. I think you took time to find a certain vendor that you wanted to work with. So tell us about the coffee part of it.
Yes, we're not a full coffee shop. So some people come in and expect, you know, the full espresso bar and all that. We are not that. The cats are our focus. But we do have a really delicious on-demand coffee machine that makes, honestly, delicious lattes, mochas, cappuccinos, hot chocolates. And it's self-serve. So you get to go over, you add whatever syrups and flavors you like. You just push a button and it makes a delicious latte. So by far the best machine I've ever tasted in this country. So we have local pastries also that are baked by a local baker. It's a wholesale bakery here in San Luis Obispo. We get those delivered a few times a week and they are super tasty. Everyone loves those. And then just a few snacks you can kind of grab and go, more like treats and cat Rice Krispie treats, that kind of thing.
You are listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX. I'm Robin with Woods Humane Society, and my guest today on Peace, Love, and Pets is Jamie Pierce, owner of the Caffeinated Cat Cafe in Grover Beach. So tell us what your hours of operation are, days of the week that you are open.
So weekdays, we are closed on Tuesdays, but we are open, let's see, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday from 10 to 6 p.m. Friday and Saturdays, we are 10 to 7 p.m., so we stay open a bit later. And then Sundays, we've just extended our hours. We are now open at 10 a.m. and we close at 5. Again, you can do walk-ins during the week or reservations on the weekend.
Okay, for people who aren't familiar with Grover Beach, tell us kind of like where you're located. Is there parking nearby?
We are on the main street of Grover Beach. So we're on West Grand Avenue. That street goes through all the main business area of town. We have street parking, and then we also have a small parking lot that we share with a local food truck that is there on site also. So, yeah, we've got ADA parking. We have a parking lot and then street parking also.
Okay. And I know we talked about some of those adoptions. Do you have a favorite adoption story or maybe your first adoption? Tell me like what some of your highlights have been.
Recently, we adopted out a bonded pair. So two kittens. Their name was Pumpkin and Pepper. They were a brother and sister duo that I actually got to foster in my home for quite a few weeks. They had a bit of a cold, so I got to take them home and take care of them to get them better to come back to the cafe. So I grew very close to them. They were two of the most affectionate kitties I think I've ever seen. They loved the cafe. They loved the people. They loved to play with the cats there. They were so happy there. But just to finally see them find their family, it was the best feeling ever. So they had this family has a little girl, and they were just so excited to have two very sweet kitties.
I know doing bonded pairs at Woods is, it's a bigger ask, but
it is.
Ultimately, it's an easier ask because you have that built-in best friend. You don't have to worry about them adjusting. Like, are they going to be lonely when I go to the work? Or are they going to get along with my other cat? Like, they already are built-in best friends at the same age. They grow together, learn together, love together. So I actually think it's easier on the people. But initially, they get a little nervous about adopting two at the same time.
They do. But we absolutely try to share with people that once you get them home, it actually turns out to be an easier experience. The cat just, they take care of each other. They sleep together. They groom each other. They're bonded. Yeah. They really need each other. And it actually takes less time from the human to have to care for them. So
let's talk a little bit more about fostering, since there's just such a big need for that with any organization, any shelter around the country. We are all desperate for more fosters. So can you share a little bit more about how you got started? Sometimes people still think, I couldn't foster. I would just like fall in love too easily. Or I couldn't give them back. And since you have so much experience, would you share a little bit about that experience for you?
Yeah. Again, I've just loved cats for my whole life. And I was working at the time, but I just felt like I needed a way to give back to the cat community and to make a difference in the lives of kitties. And so I reached out to a couple local rescues and I got set up as a foster. And it ended up being such an easier experience than I expected. Really, they will pair you up with a cat that is going to work for your situation, for your family. And They just hang out like a member of your family. And it is hard to let them go sometimes, but the more you do it, I feel like it got a lot easier. And it's just the joy of seeing that cat finally go to his home, his or her home, was just, it makes it all worth it. So I do admit I had a couple of foster fails, but you don't have to, though. You certainly, the more you do it, the easier it does get. But it's so rewarding.
Yeah. So out of your four cats, are a couple of those foster fails?
Three.
Three are foster fails. I call those foster successes, actually.
Yes, it is a success.
And sometimes people do foster specifically because they know they are getting closer to being ready.
Yeah.
And fostering kind of gives you the best of both worlds. You get to have them in your home environment, see what works best with your lifestyle. Sometimes people are picking out cats based on a color of their fur or the color of their eyes. And really, it should be about the personality and energy level. And so I love that fosters do get to kind of get the pick of the litter in a way to say, you know what? I thought it was going to be this one, but it actually turned out to be this one was the one for
our family. I agree 100%. My current kitty, Charlie, he's only a year old, but I fostered him from the time he was on a bottle until, you know, and then I ended up keeping him. But he's truly the best cat I've ever had in my entire life. And I just wouldn't have even found him had I not fostered. So it's really a great way to, if you're looking maybe to have a cat, fostering to adopt is a great option.
Yeah. Okay. So how can we find you? Share your social media because I love following it.
Yes.
And of course your website so we can either sign up to make an appointment. I know it's been chilly days here recently. So I think coffee and cats is a great way to spend a day. And then I know kitten season is right around the corner. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you're going to have a lot of action this spring.
We are. Yes. So you can go to thecaffeinatedcatcafe.com. That is our website. If you want to make a reservation, you can go to the Visit Us page there, and we have all of our events and all of our different cat sessions are available there to purchase whatever you want. And our social media, we are very active on Instagram and Facebook, so you can find us also. Instagram is thecaffeinatedcatcafe_CA for California. And Facebook is just our name also, facebook.com/thecaffeinatedcatcafe. And we would love to have you. We do a lot on social media. We're very active there.
I have to ask, what do your kids think about this? It seems like this would be such a cool thing to be a part of for kids.
They loved it. They heard about it for the 2 years leading up to this. And, you know, I think they started to think it wasn't actually going to happen, but they love it. In fact, my younger daughter, she actually does work for us at the cafe. So it's a family affair. My husband's involved. Even my mom is involved. So everybody is a part of it. So.
That's pretty cool. Yep. Well, I'm going to book my appointment soon. I know we talked about it for a while, and I'm so happy that it's up and running and going so well.
Thank you.
So as I wrap up here, I want to thank my guest, Jamie Pierce, owner of the Caffeinated Cat Cafe, now open in Grover Beach. Go check it out and get your little feline fix over there. Thank you for all you're doing in the community and helping people and pets, and especially those kitty friends.
Yes. Thank you for having me. Absolutely.
You're welcome. Woods is gearing up for a very busy spring and summer. In addition to kitten season fast approaching, we are seeing more puppies in shelters than ever before. I want to remind people that fostering puppies and kittens that are too young to be at a shelter quite literally saves their lives and helps us say yes to more animals. Since Woods is open 7 days a week for adoptions, our available animals do change daily. Adopting and sharing on social media really help us get more pets adopted, and supporting our community events like our upcoming kitten shower, Rosé the Slow Way at Hotel Slow, and Wine for Paws are coming up in April, and they are easy and fun ways to help us help more pets in need. For all things Woods, including our events calendar and more information on fostering, visit us at woodshumane.org. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for the cutest content. Thank you for listening to Peace, Love, and Pets on KCBX. I'm Robin with Woods. Don't forget, your new best friend is waiting for you at the shelter or the cat cafe.
Yes.
This is Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Up next, KCBX programming intern Sam DJ speaks to members of Cal Poly's Mariachi Club.
Hello. My guests today are the founding members of the first mariachi ensemble at Cal Poly. Welcome to Issues and Ideas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excited to be here.
Can you please introduce yourself with your names, majors, and what role you play in the club?
Hey, hi, my name is Mixley Ortiz. I am a second year music major at Cal Poly, and I will be the club's president.
My name is Andrew Garcia. I'm a first year mechanical engineering student at Cal Poly, and I will be an officer in this club.
My name's Araceli. I am a second year Spanish and music major at Cal Poly, and I'm the vice president.
For our listeners who might not be fully familiar, can you give a brief explanation of what mariachi is?
Basically, mariachi is a type of Hispanic ensemble. It consists of 5 to 6 different instrument groups, and it's a huge, like, cultural, traditional type of Mexican music. artists that have made it famous include Luis Miguel, Juan Gabriel, Rocío Dúrcal, and multiple other Hispanic artists.
What instruments are part of a mariachi ensemble?
A guitarrón, a viruela, a violin, the voice, a guitar, and am I missing anything else? A trumpet?
Yes, trumpet as well.
It can range from a variety of different instruments. Traditional ones typically have viruela, like she mentioned before, Araceli. But it can also include harps too. Sometimes they're present in there. It just really depends. Accordions are not traditionally in it, but they can be in certain instances. And yeah, mariachi music typically is present in a lot of major life events with people, whether it be the birth of a loved one or life and death. And so it's definitely very important in terms of the significance to one's life. It really accompanies the happy and sad moments in people's lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going off of that, do you have any personal connection to mariachi yourselves?
Yeah, for me, growing up, my godparents, their parents in Mexico, my goddad, his father actually worked with the mariachi. So growing up, we had a lot of musical influence. My dad and my brother play guitar. I play guitar. My mom sings, I sing. And we kind of did church choir, but like as a kind of a mariachi band growing up. So it was really nice to be able to incorporate this now here in my university experience.
I've also had a ton of experience with mariachi. I grew up playing it when I was very little. All of my tios and tias, my aunts and uncles, they all kind of raised all of me and my like 12 cousins on singing and playing instruments and everything. So yeah, since we were very little, we also were pretty musical, and like we grew up singing, and I was in a mariachi when I was in middle school, and it was a fun experience. I wanted to create that here.
Yeah, I kind of fell into mariachi kind of late in my life, I would say, compared to the others. My parents were the children of immigrants, so I would technically be third generation, second? I'm not 100%
sure.
Second generation? Okay. Yeah, so my experience was more I had heard kind of the mariachi music genre, and I knew of it, but I wasn't very drawn to it particularly. I would say once I entered, I think, my senior year of high school, I had just a teacher who I was taking a Spanish class, and I told him that I was into playing guitar, and he recommended that I join it, and I checked it out just because I didn't really have a sense of what it was. I was interested in it, and I just fell in love with the expression that it held in the songs and the singing, and really just the history behind it of how it's so important to the culture and to the people in that culture. And it's just, it was very inspiring to me, and I grew very attached to it very quickly and loved that I could explore it here at Cal Poly too by finding a group up here.
Can you talk a little more about that culture that's connected to mariachi, not just in Mexico, but maybe in the Central Coast as well?
Well, yeah, for me growing up, mariachi music, like it was just at every family party, every gathering I would go to. Like Andrew mentioned earlier, whether it was like a happy gathering or a sad gathering, in quinceañeras that I went to, my own quinceañera growing up, I had a mariachi instead of having like damas, which is like a court of people that go, like your friends, to support you. And instead of having like a court of my friends, I had a mariachi play, and we did like a few songs, and I did a few solos instead of like doing a dance or something. And it's just nice to have that type of music overall throughout my life.
I feel like it keeps us very like close to our culture, especially when we're so far away from our families and all of those fun parties like with mariachi, because I also grew up with tons of mariachi and norteños coming to our parties and hearing like my mom and my tia sing and everything. It's very much that Mexican culture, just Hispanic and culture in general, is so tied to music. And for me, since my parents are from Mexico, obviously I'm very like in tune when it comes with mariachi music, just because I grew up with it and everything, you know. It's home and it's what I love the most, and it reminds me a lot of my mom and my dad. And so I feel like lots of us Hispanic kids, when we go off to college, we don't realize how much we miss, I guess, like our roots or just like being with our family. But things like mariachi music or norteños, you know, they'll always bring us back to that feeling of home.
So what spurred the decision to form the first mariachi ensemble at Cal Poly?
Well, my freshman year, so last year, I just felt kind of disconnected because, as Araceli said, like, you know, you don't realize how much you miss your roots till you're away from them. And I love the different choir ensembles and different ensembles that they offer at Cal Poly, like the musical ones. But I felt kind of disconnected because I'm first generation. My parents only spoke Spanish to me growing up. I struggled a lot as a kid because I learned Spanish first and I picked up English after. And all of my music, I learned it in Spanish. So everything that I know, I had to translate it. And I felt like I was one step behind everybody else. They didn't understand the struggle it was with the language barriers. And I was just having a conversation with my dad, and I told him that I felt alone, and I felt like I didn't have somebody who understood what I was going through. And he just sat me down and he was like, you know, if you don't like something or you feel alone, do something to change it. And I just thought of like something that would really impact not only the school, but Cal Poly Latino culture as well. And I feel like being able to create a mariachi got us to find a lot of other Latinos and Hispanics that really want to connect with their roots, whether it's for the first time or just reconnecting and have that source of home at their university.
If you're just joining us, this is Issues and Ideas, and I'm Sam DJ with the founding members of the Mariachi Club at Cal Poly. What has the process been like so far putting the club together?
It's been very difficult. As of right now, we only have like a couple of officers. We're all trying to keep the club afloat. It's very difficult trying to find our positions and where we're going to be in this mariachi. And then just like with all the paperwork we have to fill out since we are a new club and finding gigs and everything, I don't think we realized how, I guess, difficult it would be to do this. So, you know, we do face some challenges, but for the most part, we've had lots of fun all together practicing and performing.
One of the biggest aspects that we have to deal with is just we are full-time students. And so to link up our schedules together to sort of find that time for all of us to come together and practice is very difficult because we're juggling our future of a professional career and what we're planning on doing while also trying to create this club on the side and have it become a part of Cal Poly, you know, part of the culture there.
So what do you need going forward? Do you need instruments? What's left to do?
Going forward, really, we just need instruments because what we want to start off doing is each of us, we know sufficient about our instruments and our voice to teach other students the stuff that they need to know about mariachi, the repertoire. Going forward, we just need instruments, equipment, basically. And in terms of gigs and performances, we have had like a lot of offers so far. It's just like a thing of letting people know that we exist, that we're here, and that we're ready for people to hire us whenever.
Yeah, it's very much about the communication.
And connections as well.
Out. Yeah.
Do you have any contact information that people can reach you at?
Yeah, so our Instagram is @CalPolySolDeSlo. And our email is mariachicalpolysoldeslo@gmail.com.
So going back to the club itself, who are the members? Are they just music majors? Are they from all over? Who can join?
We accept music majors, obviously. We also accept people who are of different majors. I feel like our goal with this club isn't to exclude people, but more to create a home for people that kind of is like family to them, you know what I mean? That way our members don't feel like how Mixley felt at the beginning of her freshman year. We want them to know that they have us and they have this beautiful culture and this beautiful music to back them up and to always be here with them.
And looking forward into the future, what is your long-term vision for the club?
Well, for now, we hope to carry out the club, receive enough members. Right now, we have about, I would say, 60 members. Well, 60 people of interest that want to join the Mariachi Club. And our overall goal is to eventually, hopefully, become an actual ensemble at Cal Poly.
And what would that mean for the ensemble?
Well, ensembles are, they're a class, so we would have units and we would be an actual class at Cal Poly. That's the overall goal. And Dr. Doyle, who will be our advisor, Alicia Doyle, she studied musicology and she would help a lot on us being able to achieve this goal.
And Dr. Doyle is a member of the faculty of Cal Poly?
Yes, she is.
Of the music department. Can you talk a little bit about any performances that you've already done?
Well, last Friday, We performed at a peaceful protest, which went from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. on Dexter Lawn at Cal Poly. It was basically Hispanics in support of Hispanic culture and everyone that's been facing family separation due to immigration and ICE. And we just all came together, and the girl in charge of it, her name is Amira, she reached out to me. She was like, by any chance, would you like to, you know, maybe sing or say some things? And I was like, you know what? I actually have a mariachi group that I'm starting. And I got everybody together and we all performed a few songs for them. And it was really nice to have everybody listen and sing along to songs that, you know, they grew up with. We sang some familiar songs like El Rey. Andrew killed El Rey. It was so good.
He has an amazing voice.
Yeah. Really, really good. And then Araceli sang Mi Ranchito, which is another classic. And then we had Los Laureles, Viva México, and Cielito Lindo. And Cielito Lindo is a huge song, not only in Hispanic culture, but it's been played in a lot of movies, in a lot of different shows. So it's just very impactful.
Yeah, it's very well known.
Yeah.
Actually, during the performance, me and Mixi were like on the brink of tears because as Cielito Lindo was playing, it started like sprinkling. And so it just felt like a really good moment as a community to know that like we'll always be here for each other. And even especially seeing the other like bands that were also playing and all the people with their signs, it was just community, you know, like you don't really understand what you have, I guess, until it's like gone or you're away from it. And so seeing that we had all these people that will always have our back and we'll always have theirs was pretty impactful.
Yeah, you come to Cal Poly and you'd think that the Mexican population is very like small compared to the rest of the school. So to see that many people come out and support, you kind of like puts it into perspective to see that, wow, like we're here. You know, it's just, it's nice to see your people, for lack of a better term, there.
Yeah.
Do you have any mariachi performers who are inspiring to you personally?
Well, for me, I would say someone who has been huge in my life. My mom's a huge Luis Miguel fan, and he sang a lot of mariachis, boleros. So I've just had a lot of influence from Luis Miguel or Juan Gabriel. Juan Gabriel is someone who's huge in Mexico. He passed away. May he rest in peace. But his music still, it just has such an impact on not only Mexican culture, but a lot of American culture.
I actually grew up with listening to Vicente Fernandez. He's huge in Mexico.
The Elvis
and
of Mexico.
Yeah, actually. Oh, yeah. And also an artist called Ana Gabriel. And she's written so many beautiful songs and she inspires me. I love her music. I love how she like goes after the things she wants. I really just love her as a person.
Yeah, I'm definitely very inspired by José Alfredo. He was one of the greats. He wrote many of the biggest songs, El Rey, Si Nos Dejan, just several songs that people typically know are sang by other artists that become more popular, but he was that primary songwriter who wrote most of them. Whenever I hear like his recordings, it just like takes me back to like a time where obviously I wasn't there because this was like the 30s, the 40s, the sort of the black and white movie eras. And when you just listen to it, you can hear the emotion and just, yeah, the beauty of the time. It's very beautiful to hear.
Do you have any songwriting aspirations yourselves?
Yeah, I kind of already have a song written that I hope to be able to make into a mariachi song with everybody soon, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope to write boleros or even just rancheras at some point.
I feel like my main focus as of right now is kind of sound like a little different, but my goal is to incorporate musical theater or mariachi into musical theater and make it something of itself. And so as of right now, I'm just trying to figure all that out.
Just like a little fun fact, mariachi was actually used in musicals, really old musicals. As Andrew was mentioning, José Alfredo Jiménez, he first became popular due to telenovelas and performing mariachi music in the musicals. Another artist that became super popular, one of my favorites, is Pedro Infante. His music as well had a huge impact. And in Mexico, musical theater is considered, they're called telenovelas. So hopefully we can reincorporate that and be able to bring that to Cal Poly as well.
I like that. It adds to even more of the community feeling of mariachi. Do you have any upcoming performances that you want to talk about?
Upcoming performances we have as of right now include one at CCH Pools in September. We will be performing a lot of mariachi temas. They are a smaller...
They're like a smaller little company. They sell spas and like outdoor furniture, basically all you need for your backyard. And during the nicer months, I guess like during the summer and also a bit of the spring and as we reach like the beginning of our semester, they hold these little concerts for their clients and they have this cute little stage where we're able to perform and it's just really nice, you know? You get to see their little community come together.
Yeah, we also hope to collaborate with other Latinx clubs on campus and perform for them. For example, the Folklorico mm-hmm. Club, they talked to us about collaborating, so hopefully we'll be able to collaborate with them, as well as La Casa, which is the main Latinx center. We sang at their Dia de los Muertos event this last November, so hopefully we'll be able to collaborate a lot more with the rest of the Hispanic clubs and communities on campus.
This is Issues and Ideas. I'm Sam DJ, programming intern at KCBX. Mixley, Araceli, and Andrew are members of the board of the first mariachi ensemble at Cal Poly SLO. Stay updated with their upcoming performances by following them on Instagram at Cal Poly Sol de SLO. You can also email them at calpolymariachi@gmail.com. Thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Next, from the California Report, reporter Benjamin Perper's feature about Chencho Perez, a young musician from Santa Maria Valley who is part of a growing group of musicians celebrating and experimenting with norteño, a music genre with roots in northern Mexico.
It isn't quite a guitar. It's a bajo quinto, a traditional Mexican instrument that's kind of like a cross between a 12-string guitar and a bass. I can't play it, but Chencho definitely can.
I'm playing a G right here. I just go right here.
The bajo quinto is a signature instrument in norteño music, which comes from northern Mexico. Chencho grew up listening to it. He's from Guadalupe, a small agricultural city in the Santa Maria Valley. Its population is almost 90% Hispanic or Latino, and many of them are agricultural workers from Mexico. That means Mexican musicians are really popular here, like norteño legend Ramon Ayala. Here's one of his biggest hits, Tragos Amargos.
Clavado en este rincón, como tú clavaste a mi corazón, estos tragos que tomo yo.
Growing up, my mom would always put norteño artists like Ramon Ayala, Los Tigres del Norte, like Los Tucanes. Like, we would listen to everything at norteño.
But Chencho says norteño is part of a broad category called Mexican regional music, with so many distinct styles and unique instrumentation.
Norteño is like accordion, bajo quinto, and then you got the bass and the drums.
Right.
So it's like Mexican music, but it's still two different. You know, it's like punk rock and metal rock. You know what I mean? It has similar instruments, but it's like still different. You got a different vibe from it.
Chencho comes from a family of musicians. When his younger brother started learning bass, Chencho learned drums with help from his multi-instrumentalist dad. The three of them joined up with some other musicians and started performing norteño music when Chencho and his brother were just teenagers. But then COVID hit, and it was back to the garage.
That's where everybody starts, you know? We start in the garage with just, like, the acoustic drums and, you know, one bass amp, and everything else was just acoustic.
Chencho took that time to expand his skills. He learned bass, guitar, and bajo quinto. He sang. And as COVID started to wane, he and the band started performing again. And then came the big break. They were invited to appear on Tengo Mucho Talento, a kind of Spanish language America's Got Talent. Chencho's band didn't win the competition, but appearing on TV put them on the map.
So we didn't win, but like we got a lot of, you know, a lot of work that following year. We were fully booked like the whole year.
After some reshuffling of band members, Chencho, his dad, and brother decided to split off into a new group. So they had to settle on a new name.
When we were on the show, they told us that we had a lot of energy. Like, you could feel the energy when we played. mucha energía, right? So when you think of energy, you think like of a lightning bolt.
That image gave them the idea to use the Spanish word rayo, as in a ray of lightning. And the word resonated with Chencho and his family bandmates for another reason.
We had a dog that was blind, and he lived a long time, and he was a very loyal dog, and his name was Rayo.
Combined with a nod to their hometown, the band settled on a name, Los Rayos de Guadalupe. And just a note, that's Los Rayos with Z's instead of S's. Chencho says that makes it easier for people to find them on social media, and that it looks cooler.
When we announced the Instagram post that we were like back with the new name and new member, and we got so much support, it felt really nice. You know, it felt like we really mattered in the community.
Los Rayos de Guadalupe are getting attention here in the Santa Maria area and airtime.
MMG La Raza presenta.
La Raza 102.1 FM is an entirely Spanish language radio station in Santa Maria. They play Mexican regional music from both mainstream and local artists like Los Rayos de Guadalupe. Armando Lopez is the program director and a DJ at La Raza. He says Mexican regional music is a key way that people here stay connected to Mexican culture.
They want to hear Tigres del Norte, Banda del Recodo, Arrolladora, Invasores. Here in Santa Maria, most of the people are Hispanic, so they want their music.
It's a relatively small radio market compared to much larger cities like Oxnard, but it's got more Spanish language stations overall.
Here, it's like more than six radio stations, Spanish radio stations. So that tells you that it is a good market for Mexican music.
La Raza also helps put on shows, and Armando says that involvement in the music scene lets him see how the genre is growing and changing. Young artists like Chencho Perez are blending different sounds and instrumentations together to chart unique territory.
Mexican artists, it's like every week or every month that they are coming with something new.
Chencho is just one of many young norteño musicians embracing change while staying true to the genre's roots. He's now teaching himself accordion to add to the list of all the other instruments he can play. And his group is borrowing from other styles of Mexican regional music to create new sounds.
The music we recently recorded, it's like accordion, bajo quinto, two alto horns, chachetas, and then it's a stand-up bass, and then a tuba. That's something different that I also fell in love with. That's Tepa sound. It's also kind of like what's hitting right now on the charts.
For Chencho, music isn't just a passion. It's a career. Besides performing, he's also learning the technical side of music, like live sound and audio engineering.
Music's a business, and if once you understand that, that's when you're on the right track, and music's whatever you want it to be, but I want to make this as a lifestyle and my job.
But even as he grows and expands his musical horizons, Chencho Perez says norteño will always be his roots.
I fall in love with music every day I perform. You know, hitting the accordion, the drums, the bass, and just everything coming together. Nothing else in this world can really bring people together like that.
Para poder protegerme, un escapulario se ocuparía.
That was Benjamin Perper for the California Report, speaking with musician Chencho Perez and others about norteño music. This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Next, award-winning author Yang Huang was in San Luis Obispo last month to do readings in Cal Poly. She sat down with KCBX's Tom Wilmer to talk about her life and writing.
You were born and raised in China, right?
Yes, Jiangsu province.
But then you went to university? Nanjing? Or?
In Shanghai.
Shanghai, okay.
I went to Tongji University.
Your stories, they're fiction, but they're based on reality. They're based on your life journey.
You could say it's a lived experiences.
Uh-huh.
Not all of them based on my own life. It's based on the people I know.
Yeah. So some of the more fascinating, intriguing people, you wove them in. Let's start with Living Treasures. Mm-hmm. I love that story.
Thank you for reading my books.
Oh, yeah.
I can't tell you how much this means to
me. I'm ready.
And I loved your shows.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm ready to reread them. because they're just so packed with nuances of life in China. Mm-hmm. And especially going back in time, your post-cultural revolution and your Tiananmen Square period of time, which was explosive for young people growing up in China. Tell us about your time and place there growing up and how that formed you and made you who you are.
Yeah, I actually grew up the tail end of the Cultural Revolution, so we saw the trauma the nation had gone through. And I remember this fear of Mao Zedong. In his passing, we felt like the sky has fallen, literally. Sometimes, even as a young child, I couldn't even read. I was illiterate until I was seven. But I remember when I had nightmare, I was actually call off, you know, Mao Zedong, you know, long live Mao Zedong, even after he passed. So this was, you know, indelible on the entire nation.
Yeah. Well, one of the most profound elements was the Red Guard.
Yeah.
And how people just went crazy and destroyed their own culture.
Yeah.
You know, and I've talked to people who were little Red Guards, and it's hard to explain, but just this disconnect from reality that people went through, and then kind of an embarrassment. And
did feel embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming back a little, that type of...
That's what I was going to ask you
fervor.
About. You know, I think of Hong Kong.
Yes.
And what happened there, and I go, oh my God, you know, shades of what happened before.
Yeah, I guess that cloud didn't really go away because the political system was not reformed. That's why we had this movement in 1989. We want to...
And you were a university student
Yes,
then?
I was a freshman.
In Shanghai?
Yes. Yeah, at Tongji University. So
So you had a lot of friends that were protesters who risked their lives.
Yes. There's a young man who took part in the hunger strike for 3 days. And after the crackdown, he just withdrew from the university. I actually lost in touch with him. I sometimes wonder how he's doing. Yeah, it's very sad. We have a lot of students travel to Beijing before the crackdown. And those... It was so sudden, the crackdown.
Well, how about the rising up of the students? That seemed pretty quick, too.
Yes, yes. Because the nation was ready for it. There was just so much pent-up fervor and energy and, you know, to reform. And had the support of the entire nation. In no time, the working class was mobilized. It was just such an emotional time.
Yeah. Well, it's complex, too, because, for example, your parents came of age in the height of the Cultural Revolution.
Exactly.
Right?
Looking back, it seemed like almost impossible. It was like a nightmare. But it's also scary to see that kind of craziness is coming back in this day of age.
Do you have an explanation at all for it, or is it illogical? What's happening today and why?
Because this was never resolved. They never apologized. If they apologize for the crackdown and they say students were trying to take the country to a more progressive direction, even though we couldn't get there like in the this year or next year or even decade, we should, you know, steadily head toward that direction. If there's that kind of explanation or, you know, stance, I think we would not have gone down this same dark road.
Right, right.
Because they just didn't learn the lesson and they didn't admit, you know, the huge mistake was made.
Yeah, in Living Treasures, you have a mom and a dad who came of age during the Cultural Revolution. Was that the same metaphor for your mom and dad?
Now you mention it, yeah, I guess we're the same generation. And my dad, he said...
And was he a professor?
He eventually became a professor. But during the Cultural Revolution, he was exiled to Jiangsu province. That's where he met my mom. Otherwise, they might not have met.
Interesting. So they were forced to work on a farm, you know? collective? Or?
My father was forced to work in a shipyard.
Oh, wow.
His major was psychology. Uh-huh. So, you know, he just became a worker. Uh-huh. It's everybody, young people were exiled. Yeah. He picked up a lot of like manual technical engineering work. Mm-hmm. And, like he built his own television.
Wow.
In the 70s. It was so funny that because he used those diagrams, mm-hmm. and he had those parts, he just put them together and the image was upside down.
Oh, geez.
So you had to like turn your head sideways and they drift. They were like dancing. Mm-hmm. Even then, you know, the entire neighborhood came to watch the television.
How
upside
funny.
Down.
And that's another thing you reference in your books about the kids and families watching television.
Yeah.
And more than once you reference American mm-hmm. shows.
Yes. In the 80s, there were growing pains.
Right, yeah.
We just thought it was so cool. And Dynasty. Yeah, we kept up with popular music as well.
Mm-hmm. I know more than one person. That's how they learned English, was watching television.
Yeah. Even after I came to the States, I learned English by watching music videos. Uh-huh. To me, it was like poetry. I kept a closed caption on, and that was a shortcut.
That's really great. Dig a little deeper on the first book, Living Treasures. Mm-hmm. You have a family in there. You talk to us about the characters and what happens and why you wanted to write this book and share the story.
I have always wanted to write about the student movement because it profoundly changed all of us. Mm-hmm. It just never left me. But it's very hard to tell that story without just go for the big story. You know, you just want to go through the crackdown.
Right.
But it's the little things that really changed the entire nation that never went away. And I want to tell that story.
One of the things you allude to is the one-child policy.
Yes.
And I did not know until you mentioned that Mao Zedong, that he was not a strong advocate for the one-child policy.
Yeah, I think they changed their mind about it.
Yeah.
So initially they were...
He wanted more.
Yeah, big
more
families.
People, yeah.
They rewarded those mothers. They were called glorious mothers.
Uh-huh.
And the state gave them subsidies for raising big families.
Uh-huh.
And then he was... the economist said, you know, there really should be family planning policy.
Mm-hmm.
But because Mao Zedong really advocate for big families, and it just messed up the family planning could have worked.
Yeah. Well, and again, if you jump forward mm-hmm. to the last 5-10 years, the one-child policy has backfired on the Chinese economy.
Exactly.
And now there's a shortage of workers who are still of working age.
Yes. I think this is a problem with China. The policy swings left and right and left and right.
Yeah.
It just never stay in a sensible, logical way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why currently they're saying that if the chairman or the emperor, really, don't do anything, the country would have been just fine. You would have done great. And it would be prosperous. It's
yeah.
only because this dictator really wants to make the nation that he thinks is going to work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's causing so many problems.
Yeah.
And they never could correct it because it just swing left and right.
So are you old enough to know friends who were Little Red Guards? Or were they kind of a generation before you?
I think that by the time I came of age, those people were hiding now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They did not want to admit
yeah.
what they did because,
mm-hmm.
You know, they felt some kind of remorse and, you know, it was stupid.
Well, let's do a synopsis, mm-hmm. an overview of the high points of Living Treasures, the storyline and what you were communicating.
It's a story about a young law student. Her name's Gu Bao.
And is she based on somebody we know?
I think it's based on a lot of people I know, but they
not,
didn't...
not you?
Personality
traits?
Some of her personality traits, it's... She's like a lot of us. Mm-hmm. But I think parts of it must be me, you know. Because a writer really, all the characters is a writer, you know, when she's working on it. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to become all of them. And sometimes I couldn't distinguish the reality from imagination.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're so deep into it.
Yeah.
And the imagined things seemed more real. And it was real for me.
And how about her husband? Was he, again, kind of a composite?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's a composite. He definitely, you know, has some quality of my husband. But, of course, my husband was never a soldier. He didn't do...
How about you? That was a curious question. Did you have to serve at all in the Army?
We did the military training.
Right.
It was mandatory.
So it was like one semester or 1 year? Or?
1 month for
okay.
us.
Okay. So you were in uniform?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. We shot guns. We shot rifles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we did all this military training. And, yeah, a lot of young female students, they admire those young soldiers.
I have a lot of friends who are Chinese who live in America,
mm-hmm.
and they're just, for some reason, they just admire an American soldier in uniform. They just have an affinity mm-hmm. for that. I find really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, there were other ethnic groups, right?
Yeah.
They just admire soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I spent time in Outer Mongolia,
uh-huh.
and there's a whole cultural dynamic there that, you know, you have the Han people and then
yeah.
the peripheral people.
Uh-huh, yeah. Minorities.
Yeah. Back to Living Treasures. Again, talk to us about what happens in the story, the high points.
So she fell in love with this young soldier she met during the military training. And they got into trouble pretty quickly. To protect her reputation and prevent her from dropping out of school, her mother shipped her off to the countryside to have a secret abortion. There she meets a young country woman who's hiding from one child policy workers because she had a second pregnancy that will bring on the wrath, and they will force her to have abortion. And Gu Bao was not very discreet about that friendship. She's, mm-hmm. you know, she's very excited because she's going through her own healing process from the abortion. She inadvertently brought one child policy worker to her hiding place, and this caused...
What was his name again?
Charles Du. It was a nickname.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he sounded pretty evil in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
A moment about the abortion doctor, because mm-hmm. he was a victim of the Cultural Revolution too, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why he wasn't a licensed MD. The doctor
performed the surgery.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes. There were a lot of these doctors. Like you mentioned, the barefoot
yeah.
doctors who had MD licenses overseas.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this... So he's from a medical family, you know, mm-hmm. and he's doing great work, but he was exiled mm-hmm. to this mountain village to do this menial labor. But he actually saved a lot of women's lives, possibly. Mm-hmm. So he made this unbearable job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he took care of those women in very difficult circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I just really respect a lot of Chinese people. They just make the best of impossible conditions.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they call it being stoic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just... And resilient.
Mm-hmm.
But your heart goes out to them. That,
yeah.
You know, including journalists.
Mm-hmm.
I really have so much admiration for Chinese journalists, you know, back then and now. They're doing brave, impossible work
yeah.
under the censorship.
And knowing they could be arrested any day.
Yes, and some
yeah.
of them have been.
Mm-hmm.
And they still continue to speak out.
Yeah.
The country should be so grateful to them, even though, you know, their voices are silenced. And, yeah, it's a lot of, they brought a lot of danger on them.
How cool. Well, okay, only because of time. Is your mom and dad, are they still alive?
My father passed away.
Uh-huh.
My mother is still... yeah, she lives in Berkeley.
Oh, wow. How cool. You're really blessed to have her there.
I am.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
to learn more about your world, mm-hmm. where would you direct us?
You can visit my website, yanghuang.com. That's my name, yanghuang.com.
And you could order the books through that portal on your website?
There are links. You can order from your favorite local mm-hmm. bookstore.
Yang, thank you so much. This
thank
has been
so
great.
Much, Tom.
So we'll have to do part two coming up.
I would love to.
Okay.
That was KCBX's Tom Wilmer in conversation with author Yang Huang. You've been listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. Gary Eister composed our theme music. A special thanks to all our guests and contributors this week. I'm Meher Ali. Join us each Monday from 1 to 2 in the afternoon for more local stories. You can head to our website to learn more about what you heard today or to listen to past segments at kcbx.org.